Hey guys, this is Rob Paulson, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to episode 224 of the Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks Optimus Solo, and joining me, as usual, is the Comic Concierge, Dan. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad we're doing this show because it was a little touch and go there for a moment. Our power went out, internet went out, like literally like 30 minutes ago. I'm like, oh no, but it came back. So, but if I cut off in between, you'll know why. I don't know. It's not even storming, so I don't know what's going on. But
that's the crazy part.
Yeah.
Here, could always be storming. So it's like, well, you never know, but, yeah, I'm glad you're able to do this one. Looking forward to the conversation today. I have no idea what direction this is going to take, so I'm intrigued to say the least. We are continuing our talk through the retrospective that is the Cary Grant retrospective. We covered four of his films in the Hitchcock retrospective and decided that we had not gotten enough Cary Grant. We hadn't gotten our fill yet of the actor, so we decided to continue through his filmography. We've already talked about bringing up Baby and His Girl Friday, both of which would be probably considered screwball comedies, whereas today's topic, we're going to go more into the, I guess, romantic comedy. There's a fine line, I guess, that distinguishes one from the other. We can get into that a little bit probably during the course of our conversation, but we are talking about 1940s, The Philadelphia Story. Before we get the lowdown on the film and all of the details, Dan, just remind people what your background is or what you came to this film as far as knowledge of The Philadelphia Story.
I came with zero knowledge of The Philadelphia Story. I have not seen this before. I didn't really know much about it. It's like one of those movies I've heard about, of course, because it's Oscar nominated, has big stars in it, but I really knew nothing about the plot, the background, where it comes from. So it's kind of going into this completely blind.
Yeah, I had, for once, I've seen the film that you haven't, so I like that for, I'll take my moment in the sun. No, it didn't help me at all, but once upon a time, like I said, probably in different episodes, my mom and I were, I think it was while I was home from a break at college, or maybe right after college, or maybe towards the last couple years of high school, I don't remember exactly when, but we were trying to make our way through some of the AFI top 100 films that I had not seen. A lot of them she had seen because she grew up in that time period and things like that. Well, not in this time period. She was born a year after this came out, but we were making our way through a few of these, and this is one of the ones that I remember watching, and I remembered having a positive reaction, but I could have told you nothing about the film until I rewatched it this last week. So it was probably 20 to 25 years ago when I saw this. So outside of a vague recollection that I liked the film at that time, I couldn't have told you anything about it. Nor did I probably even know really who Cary Grant and all of these people were back then. I mean, I probably did, but not to the point that I do now. So it's definitely interesting. So let's let Dan get the dirty work here and lay down the foundation for The Philadelphia Story, and then we'll come back with our reactions and thoughts.
Don't call it a comeback. She was doing it for years. The Philadelphia Story is one of those movies that's own history is as interesting as the movie itself. After being labeled box office poison, Katharine Hepburn left Hollywood and headed to Broadway to work on the production of The Philadelphia Story. It became a major hit, and Howard Hughes bought the film rights and worked with Hepburn to make a film of their choosing. They cast who they felt would be the best chance of success for the movie. That cast included Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, and Ruth Hussey. Those choices proved to be correct, as all but Grant were nominated for an Oscar, with Jimmy Stewart winning his one and only Academy Award. The film was also a box office success, making over $3 million, making it one of MGM's biggest films of 1940. In the film, Tracy Lord is a wealthy Philadelphia socialite, and she's preparing to marry George Kittredge, a successful but stuffy businessman. On the eve of her wedding, her charming ex-husband, C.K. Dexter Haven, reappears, determined to win her back. Dexter arrives with two reporters, writer Mike Connor and photographer Elizabeth Ombre, who are covering the glamorous event for Gossip magazine. As reporters mingle with Tracy's eccentric family, Mike is surprised to find himself drawn to her wit and vulnerability. Meanwhile, Dexter quietly shows his general love and support, in contrast to George, who judges Tracy harshly. The legacy also led to later adaptations of High Society, and it is seen as one of the greatest romantic comedies of all time. Does that remain to be true? Considering this is Katharine Hepburn's movie, where does it fit into the career of Cary Grant? Back to Kevin and myself to discuss.
All right. Thanks, as always, Dan, for laying all the groundwork and getting us setting the stage, I guess you could say, which would be appropriate since this is obviously based on a play. So first watch for you, Dan, of The Philadelphia Story, going in a little bit of a different direction than the previous two films we talked about with Cary Grant, although still comedic. What was your initial reaction of The Philadelphia Story after watching it?
It's interesting, you know, going through these retrospectives, the Hitchcock one, now this one, we've watched a lot of really good movies. And this one had a lot of acclaim. Like I said, I just going into it, not knowing much about it. And honestly, like, it's one I'm kind of still struggling with for a lot of reasons. You know, it's a movie certainly that is of its time. And I try not to, like, judge a movie by 2025 standards when it was made, because it takes very little time to realize, oh, this was definitely a different time. You know, get, you know, kind of a domestic abuse joke, like right in the beginning, like, oh, wow, this is not holding back. And there's a lot of that stuff that maybe not holds up the greatest, but I was like, not trying to hold that necessarily against it, trying to judge a movie for where it's at. And, you know, there's so many great stars in this, as we know, of course, Cary Grant, James Stewart, the only movie they've ever done together, Katharine Hepburn as well. Yeah. But I guess, yeah, and then Hepburn as well. So it's a stacked cast. Like, you can see why it became so well regarded. And as I'm watching it, though, and there's moments about it that I think are, like, I love the story behind it. Like, how this was kind of a play that Katharine Hepburn had. She was looked at before this came out as box office poison for a while. So she stepped away from Hollywood, did this play, and this was kind of like her big comeback story. And she led a lot of it, even help, you know, kind of getting the cast together. But the movie itself, as I'm going through it, like there's good laughs there. I don't know if I would qualify it. And I saw people qualify it as a screwball comedy, maybe just because we're coming off of His Girl Friday and coming off of Bringing Up Baby. It is so much like more tame than those. It's not nearly as fast paced. It's not nearly as like off the wall. It's more true to life compared to those in a lot of ways.
Right.
But I don't know. I wasn't super invested in this dynamic of the storyline. You have this kind of marriage going on, and you have kind of like not even a love triangle. It's like a love like octagon. It's all these different people kind of, you know, involved. And it's a lot of the care. Like, Katharine Hepburn is fantastic. The performances, I think, are strong. Although I think Cary Grant really doesn't get much to do compared to like what we've seen him so far. He's really on the sidelines for so much. But I struggle too with, as I look at this movie, I'm trying to understand, like, what is it trying to say? Like, what is the point here? And I don't know what was getting at. Like, I do wonder if it's a movie that gets hindered by a lot of the code at the time. Like, if during when this was made, if you had a divorce, they had to get back together. That was a rule. You know, if you had people of high society, they had to be looked upon in positive light. And you feel that here. And it's strange. And I guess I struggle with this in a lot of ways. I don't think it's necessarily poorly made or bad. I didn't really enjoy it, though, I guess, is my best way of putting it.
So I'm struggling with it on a rewatch. And I don't know if I'm struggling with it in the exact same ways, or if I guess I'm still trying to come to terms with how I feel about the film. And one thing that I'm struggling with for sure is trying to decide if watching this after watching Bringing Up Baby and His Girl Friday does skew my viewing of this film. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, obviously the other two are way more screwball. Like, they're way more crazy, fast paced, out of this world, and things of that nature. And this is a different animal, so to speak. And I don't know how that worked for me watching them in the order that we watched them, if that makes sense. I don't, like, I'm trying to decide if we would have started with the Philadelphia Story, what would have been my take?
Yeah.
And then we watch those other two later. I'd like to think that I can separate all of the films and just watch them for what they are and just, like, in a vacuum, so to speak. But I guess that's not how brains work. So it's really hard to, like, separate that. And then the other thing, granted, like you said, there, it seemed like a lot of, not only was there the Hays Code that's going on during this time, but reading up a little bit on this film, which makes sense, they talk about how there was like a kind of rash of these types of films that are dealing with the topic of divorce or the topic of temporarily going away from your significant other or your husband or wife and then coming back to them, those types of things, which I hadn't even really thought of. And then as I'm thinking back, it's like, well, okay, bringing up baby, he's leaving his fiance and, yeah, you know, having this fling that leads to something else. Got it. His Girl Friday, we have a divorce that ends up, you know, she's getting remarried and then, you know, the first husband comes back into the picture. And then we get almost that exact same plot line here where she's getting remarried and he's involved, but then there's also now a third person involved. So it's like, we're getting all that. And it's, I agree with what you said. I'm wondering if also part of it, because we've kind of been focused on Cary Grant in a way, is skewed by, like you said, he's kind of not 100% relegated to the sideline, but he's not nearly what he is in the two films we've just watched. Like,
yeah,
he is front and center in those two films. And it's going to be interesting as we kind of go through the rest of this series to see, like, what kind of roles he plays in all the rest of the films, because we didn't necessarily set out to watch only films that he was like the lead or star in, although he's Cary Grant, so he's going to be a star probably in most films, but we were just looking at films that he appeared in. So it'll be interesting to see if we have other ones where he's kind of, you know, third or fourth. I mean, he does get top billing for this film, but he made that happen. So, you know, you could say he's third. Well, it's interesting because he gets top billing, but in reality, he's probably third on the list as far as like screen time, lines, and things like that. I'm just completely guessing. That's just, I have nothing to back that up. And you have Jimmy Stewart, who is third on the billing, but gets the Oscar for the best actor for this film. So it's kind of an interesting, not only is there this, like, it's not a triangle, you're right, but not only, for lack of a better term, there, you know, this triangle of love story going on in the film, but then it also seems like there's a triangle of, like, who gets credit for what as actors in this film as well. You know what I mean? Like, and I did not realize, I was, I guess, dumb to the fact that this was Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart's only role together. I just figured that there was probably other films that they appeared in. This is the fourth time that we've seen Cary Grant and Hepburn together, and the second one we've covered, bringing up Baby being the other. He's also in Holiday with her, and then an earlier film called Sylvia Scarlet. So they're together a number of times. But yeah, I'm really struggling with, like, the order that we watched it and trying to decide if that's influencing it. I'm also trying to think back 25 years to why I had a positive reaction the first time, outside of maybe it was just something that I hadn't seen before and it didn't necessarily fit into the, I think sometimes people, especially younger folks, look at older movies and think it's going to be a certain way.
Yeah.
Whether they think it's going to be boring or they think it's going to be something they can't relate to or something like that. And maybe I was like 17 or 18. I don't know. Maybe that, you know, was refreshing when I saw this and was like, well, this is actually like something I can follow and it's got some humorous parts and things of that nature. But do you think it's at all weird to watch this one after those other two that are way more intense?
It's very much a different speed, you kind of, because bringing up Baby and His Girl Friday, kind of in the same vein in style and execution, helps that it's both of those are Howard Hawks, and this is certainly a left gear. But I think even without that, I think I would still have a lot of the similar issues, because I was able to eventually kind of settle in to, like, what this was. I'm like, okay, this is going a different way, definitely more romantic. You know, kind of a combination of the romance and comedy. And I think that I struggle just looking at kind of like Catherine Hepburn's character and like her progression, and like, mm-hmm. you certainly feel bad for her in some ways. Like, it feels like, especially at the end, it's like, this is just like gaslighting 101, where she's led to believe like she did something when she didn't necessarily do it, and the people are just not being like, it's a strange feeling. But I also feel like in a lot of ways she still has that kind of take charge element of her character. And like I said, I do think it's interesting that before this she was labeled yeah. as box office poison because of, you know, she was an actress that was more, you know, she didn't fit that stereotypical role. She, I guess, was seen as more kind of, she stood up for herself a bit more, I guess. And right. you see that here, and she's certainly like a broken individual, and this has a lot of broken people, but I feel like it ends up being very forgiving of all their transgressions in a lot of ways. Like, everyone kind of gets out of this unscathed.
Yeah, it's like it wraps it up with a bow at the end that's a little too neat and pretty.
Yeah, and there's that, and that lack of bite, I think, really hurts it, because, again, that's where I'm like, I'm trying to, what is ultimately the point here? Like, it's almost like the point here is, like, the bad guy is the guy that, like, had to work himself, you know, was started at the bottom, worked himself up. He ends up being the bad guy. And everyone else that kind of, like, you know, that was born into their situation is seen as, like, you know, that they're in the right, which is a weird, weird thing. Although, I guess, Jimmy Stewart's there is meant to be more of the, you know, the everyman. And I guess that's also what we remember way back when we did Vertigo. We mentioned like how the romantic dynamic there didn't work for us. And I got similar feelings here. Like Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn. Like, I think Katharine Hepburn tells a lot more, but I never saw either of them having much chemistry. So like, there's that dilemma of like, okay, like, oh, who do you want them to get together? Like, who's, you know, that's, you want that tension there. And I was like, I just hope all these people just leave each other alone. I think that's the kind of the best. I felt bad for, you know, Ruth Hussey's, or the photographer, like, cause she's like the only innocent person. She seems like the only likable person, cause it's like, get away from all these people. But I don't know. That's where I struggled with it, because I'm like, okay.
Well, it's interesting too. And I a couple points that you brought up. Number one, is Jimmy Stewart just a hard person to pull off the romantic angle in a film? Or I mean, I haven't seen like all of his films, but it seems like we've seen that a couple times where it's like,
I think he works in It's a Wonderful Life. I think it works there. Yeah. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah. I also was not prepared for how young Jimmy Stewart is in this one. Maybe that's just because we just came off of, you know, some of his Hitchcock films, which are like 15, 20 years later, but I was like, holy cow, he's young in this film.
It's like, he's only 30 years old. Like, I never knew he was that young.
I didn't realize either. Another thing that's interesting. So, Amanda was watching this one for the majority of it. She has a habit of, we watch these late at night, so I don't fault her for this, but a lot of times, you know, she'll fall asleep towards the end of a film. And then she'll either rewatch the ending later, or she'll just ask me what happened. And she asked me the next day, she's like, hey, like, who did, you know, did Katharine Hepburn end up with Jimmy Stewart? And I was like, no, she didn't. She's like, oh, she ended up with the guy that she was like engaged to or whatever. And I was like, no. She's like, wait, what? I was like, yeah, she just ends up with Cary Grant. And she's like, what? Like, how? Why? I don't understand. So it is interesting. It's like, I get that he's like trying to, you know, potentially win her back and things of that nature, but they sure don't spend a whole lot of time developing it from her angle as far as like why she is willing to go back in that situation. And then it also makes you question, like, it comes out right out of the gate and she, like you said, has the domestic abuse where he just like throws her to the ground, and then they decide to make like some comedy jokes out of it with like the little sister or
don't say sock.
And all this other stuff. And it's like, how was that angle even important? Like, no. I feel like you can take that completely out. You can just have some dialogue that like references that they didn't get along, similar to like what we got in His Girl Friday. And it doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
Like it's a weird choice to like have him do that, because then it makes it even more messy, the fact that she just goes back to him with little to no like development of that. So that's kind of rough. Like they spend the time developing her and Jimmy Stewart. Like that's granted they're both drunk off their butts, but like that's where they spend them. By the way, I think they both played excellent drunks.
Yeah, like I said, I think all the performances here are really good, even if like the chemistry wasn't perfect. And part of that, I think, was purposeful because you don't want them to be together. Like Jimmy Stewart's character is a bit lost. He's kind of not made it into that mature level yet. And
right.
Cary Grant, I guess, kind of has in some ways, even though he's kind of a vindictive jerk that is just trying to drive her crazy. But yeah,
I feel like sometimes though, like when we get characters that are quote unquote like drunk or whatever in films, that sometimes it gets overdone. Like the people are like going too bananas, or it's like they have trouble pretending to be drunk when they're sober type deal. And you know, obviously we saw Cary Grant play a drunk role in North by Northwest, right? And it's played up a little bit more on the comedic side, whereas this one is doing it. Yes, it's funny, and yes, there's a lot of moments during those scenes that are comedic, but I feel like it's more believable that it's natural and not being played for comedy, but it's funny because of what just naturally what's happening. So I did appreciate that part of the film.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, and there are some really good comedic bits in it as well. Like there's the funny joke about like, asking him for the typewriter. I forget the exact line, but there are some good back and forth moments here and there. Yeah, so I do think there are some strong comedic bits, like you pointed out, and I think the cast does work well together, and they feed off each other pretty well. Like the chemistry as a group is strong, and it does feel like a movie though that was a play. And it's very stagnant.
Yes,
and it's not moving very often. Kind of like there's no momentum. That's kind of the thing too. It felt like there was even the wedding. I'm like, wait, that kind of just happened. It's like, I didn't even know that they were already like. It just kind of comes out of nowhere, and that was one of the issues too. It's just like things just kind of happened because they have to. Nothing kind of moves from one moment to the next. Right. All that organically, and that kind of I think that's where a lot of my disengagement came from too. It's like you had to. It didn't kind of bring you in. It kind of just went from one moment to the next in a rather like haphazard manner.
It almost reminds me of like something that you would have seen like a TV. I'm not trying to, this may sound overly harsh, but like if you had a romantic comedy, like a sitcom, and like this was the movie that they produced for the, like out of the sitcom because the sitcom was popular. And then they're like, oh, we need a movie for it. And like they threw some stuff together. I feel like there needed to be like there was no momentum, like you're saying, like it just seemed like it was put together to be put together in a way. Granted there's acts, like there's a beginning, middle and end and all that type of stuff. I'm not saying that it doesn't have the structure of a story and stuff like that, but you're right. There's not much of a crescendo. There's not much of a build. It's a little quick with the switch at the end, and it almost is anticlimactic where it's just like, oh, I guess that's what we're doing here, and now the movie's over. So I didn't feel much of a build for anything. I want to get your take too, because I think we both said that, you know, Cary Grant doesn't get quite as much as we're used to him getting. I don't know if we think that he should have got more or not, but just like that's what his role was. Two things that I found interesting on that. Number one, I did read that he was given the choice of which role he wanted to play.
Yeah.
And he went with the abuser. So I'm just, I don't know what that says. It's interesting that he didn't go with the character that gets the most like pizzazz out of it. He did go for I guess maybe he wanted to be the character that gets the girl in the end. I don't know, but he had his choice. And then there was also an interview with the director, I believe it was, and he was talking about the film and talking about the cast and, you know, saying how a lot of people say that this was a fairly easy film to make. Like it only took 8 weeks of shooting. I guess there was very few retakes. The guy that gets the Donald Ogden Stewart, who gets the Oscar for screenplay, says it was like the easiest Oscar won in history because he hardly had to do anything. He just listened to the play and like wrote some notes to react to like whatever the people laughed at during the play. And he's was like, this isn't fair that I'm getting an Oscar for this. But the director, I know, made some type of comment about how, you know, all there was all these awards given out and we had this like great cast. And he's like, Hepburn gets a nomination. Jimmy Stewart gets a nomination. Ruth Hussey gets a nomination. And he's like, Cary Grant's the one person out of the group that doesn't get a nomination. And his quote was, and he's the best of the, he was the best of the bunch, which I found that was interesting from coming from the director that he considered Grant like the best of the bunch, but maybe just from an acting standpoint, a talent standpoint, because I don't see where he would have gotten, he doesn't get enough here, I don't think, to warrant award nomination, but
I think probably in the sense of he maybe has like the most command of his role, or maybe the most comfortable, because he is very natural. He fits a role pretty well. Like that conniving
individual. And we've seen shades of this in his other roles.
Like, I think, so yeah, I do agree it's not the most showy performance, and I think that kind of makes sense because I think Jimmy Stewart as an actor kind of fits that role better because he can play that everyman a bit more. Like, if you have a character that's supposed to be your average individual and someone that's meant to be your, like, the individual of high society, and you have...
Right.
If you were to switch them, I think it would have come off a little strange.
Right.
So I think it was the right choice, even if they didn't give him... It didn't give him as much to do, but I think what he does well. He's just... He's the one that is kind of poking and prodding, the one that is kind of pushing things to happen, and just watch, and then stepping back and watching the chaos. So,
yeah,
he's very much an observer in this, which is something I think Cary Grant does really well. Like, he, when you see him in scenes, like, he's really good at reacting, and I think his reactions go a long way in a lot of these scenes.
He also is very intent. Like, he's very careful to be in the moment, even when he's not in the moment. Like, he's, if you watch his eyes and his body language, like, he's paying attention to what's going on. You know what I mean? Sometimes you see somebody when it's not their time to speak or it's not their time to do stuff, you don't 100% get like them selling the fact that they're in that moment. And I feel like he does a really good job of like being a presence, even when he's not speaking, and paying attention and kind of being a part of whatever's going on. And he's very good at the little side comments and like the little, like he's almost like better at being able to just interject some ad lib lines or some little one liners here and there that it's kind of fun. Like, I almost always want a little bit more of that, but you know, we have had some films where he gets a lot of that. So like, that's good too. Gary Cooper made a comment too that I thought was kind of interesting. He was quote unquote upset that they cast Grant in the film. That maybe, I don't know if he was genuinely upset or if he was just making kind of a comedic quote or whatever, but he said, Cary Grant shouldn't have got the role I should have. Cary Grant's too pretty, and nobody would believe that Hepburn would have thrown him out in the first place. So it should have been me because I'm ugly enough where it would have been believable or something along those lines. So I thought that was kind of funny as well. Obviously, this was like you mentioned, you know, Katharine Hepburn gets a lot of say in this. Like, part of her deal with like owning the rights to the Howard Hughes bought the rights, but then gives them to Katharine Hepburn, and she sells them, but has some say in like the director or the writer or different people. And I think she got like some able to suggest like some of the casting and things like that. And I did read that, you know, she wanted Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy to play these roles first, but they were both busy with other commitments. So then I, you know, ended up being Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart after the fact. I don't know about enough about Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy to know how that works. Obviously, Clark Gable would be playing the Cary Grant role and Spencer Tracy the Jimmy Stewart role. So that was kind of interesting as well. And then I do find Cary Grant he is a fascinating person. Like, he's had some interesting things in like the negotiation of his contracts, and I don't know if it's him doing it, if it's somebody, I don't know how, you know, their agents, if they had agents back then. I don't know much about classic Hollywood, but you know, we talked about like in one of the Hitchcock films where he had it like wrote in that he gets so much more money if it was after, you know, the time period, which it was like all after, so he made like a ton of money. In this one, he demanded top billing and $137,000, which was a lot at that time period. That's the equivalent of like $2.8 million, I think, maybe 5 years ago. So he demands like all this money for it, and then he just donates it all. they said at least everything I read, he donates the entire salary to like the British War Relief Fund. So like he made this big stink that he needed to be top billing and get all this money just so he could donate it all, which is like, I don't know. I just find him a fascinating human being. So
yeah.
Another thing I wanted to get your take. I know I have a feeling, obviously, based on what we've talked about, how you're going to feel. But this film, I believe, like you talked about, probably has 100%, you know, Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes named this the best romantic comedy of all time. And AFI, on one of their lists of top 100s when they were doing the genres, had this number 5 on the all-time romantic comedy list. Do you feel that those are rankings too high for what you observed and watched with The Philadelphia Story?
I certainly wouldn't put them, like, if I'm ranking romantic comedies on that list. I think, you know, the movies we've done already, I mean, I would say I would rank Bringing Up Baby and His Girl Friday a lot higher than either of the, than this. But again, I don't know, in the sense of, like, this is certainly more on the romance side. So if you're looking for more of the romantic angle, like, this spends more time there. But personally, for me, it's, I couldn't.
Do you know,
That admiration.
Yeah, no, I get that. Do you have any guesses as to what AFI's number one romantic comedy was on that top 10?
It Happened One Night.
It Happened One Night was number 3.
Okay.
Got another guess? That was good. You got you got one of something that was in the top 3 just like that.
Well, it's like, it's the, you know, it beats Citizen Kane. What, like, give me a hint of decade or era.
The number one film is from 1931. It's starring Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin?
Yeah.
City Lights? Or...
Yes. Yep, City Lights is number one. Okay. The second film is from 1977.
Annie Hall.
And then we have It Happened One Night. I'll give you number 4 is Roman Holiday from 1953 with Audrey Hepburn. Then number 5 is The Philadelphia Story. There's 2 films on this list. One from 1989 and one from 1993. Oh, actually, one from 1987. Any guesses on those 3?
When Harry Met Sally.
Yep. That is number 6.
Pretty Woman?
Nope. We have 1987 starring Cher.
Oh, Moonlighting? Is that what it's not Moonlighting?
Moonstruck.
What's it called?
Moonstruck. Yep.
Yeah.
And then number 10 on the list is from 1993.
93. That's not what Pretty Woman, right? I'm trying to.
No.
Not He Got Mail. What is that other one? Is it Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember them. Yeah, I can't think of that. I can only think of He Got Mail, but I don't. That's not the one before that.
You have the right 2 people, and that's the same type of thing that I would be thinking through. It's Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle, of course, yeah. Which I've never seen, so there you go.
Okay, and then the only other 2 on the top 10 would have been Harold and Maude from 1971, and interesting, number 7 is also a George Cukor film, who's the director of The Philadelphia Story. He also directed Adam's Rib, which also has Katharine Hepburn and this time Spencer Tracy. So I haven't seen that one. That one's from 1949. So those were the AFI's top 10 romantic comedies of all time. That was done, I believe, back in 2000, maybe? Is when they did all those.
We did it. Yeah. Like 100 years. And then they redid it again. They did one and then they did it again. I think it was around the time. Yeah.
Okay. So interesting how everybody thinks about, I guess it depends on if you're going to put more of an emphasis on the romantic part or the comedy part, or like how you balance those 2 things out. I definitely would not probably put The Philadelphia Story, like you said, higher than some of the other ones that we have talked about. But other thoughts that you had about The Philadelphia Story, other things that worked or didn't work for you that you haven't got a chance to mention yet?
I did want to reiterate, like, just how good Katharine Hepburn is in this, because I think, like, the best part of it is her character, because there are many layers to her character. She's got a lot she has to do. She's pretty much in every scene, and she has to kind of ride this line of, like, you know, being likable, being, you know, but also kind of broken, and having, like, you know, you see, and when she has to be more dramatic, even if the script is a bit maybe quick in its pacing, like, she sells it. Like, it feels like she has to go through so many different emotions in a very short period of time. And really remarkable. You see why she was the star she was, and you know, of course, this, you know, she worked on this. She did the Broadway play, and you know, it was a role, you know, made for her, and it's really strong. And I did want to mention just how strong she is. I know this is the Cary Grant retrospective, but gotta give her flowers as well. So I thought, just wanted to, and we didn't talk about her, but I did think one of the funniest parts of the movie was Virginia Wilder as like her younger sister. She certainly was like that comic relief. You talked about like kind of a sitcom feel. Her character did kind of feel like, you know, maybe that was kind of inspired a lot of sitcoms to kind of take a character like that, because you feel like you always get that spunky little kid that is wise above their years, and you see that in so much. And I don't know if this was the first person movie to do it or what have you, but I thought she was at least good, and gave a lot of really some of the best moments in the movie. So.
Almost reminded me a little bit of the sister in the Hitchcock film that we watched with, goodness gracious, the one that was like the picture of not suburbia, but like of the opposite of suburbia. The rural town setting where the two Charlies.
Suspicion?
Is it Suspicion? No, Shadow of a Doubt.
Shadow of a Doubt,
The little girl in that family. Almost.
That
type of vibe, yeah.
Definitely.
Also, Hepburn does her, I guess, her own quote unquote stunts in this film. When she jumps in the pool, that's actually her, and all of that. So she wasn't afraid to do that. Interesting note, this is off of Wikipedia, and I hadn't read this beforehand, so I'm kind of just reading this as we're going through, and it's just an odd take, but this is from one of the cameramen from the film, and his quote is, "Everyone had enormous fun on the movie. The days and nights were sweltering that summer of 1940, but nobody cared. Cary got along very well with Kate Hepburn. She enjoyed him pushing her through a doorway in one scene, so she fell over backwards so much that she had him do it to her over and over again." And I'm like, just shows you the difference. And yeah, I guess there was a scene in which she had to throw Cary out of the door of a house with bag and baggage, and she did it so vigorously he fell over and was bruised. As he stood up looking rueful, Kate said, "That'll serve you right for trying to be your own stuntman." So apparently they got along well, and they didn't give two thoughts about the domestic abuse at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
Different times. So that's kind of crazy, but
yeah, you can say that a lot, because you have drunk driving, you have like, you know, open, you know, the entire plot. Hinges upon like a rich bureaucrat not being out that he's cheating on his wife. Like that's the story you're rooting for. It's like, it is definitely a different time. So there's no Philadelphia in this whatsoever. Not one shot of Liberty Bell.
Only the opening, text in the opening, right? Isn't that from where they do the Declaration of Independence?
Yes. That's true. That's true.
That's
true.
That's it.
Yeah.
I guess this is based on like an actual like socialite / like person that was like the Catherine. I know it's written for Catherine Hepburn, but they had like an actual person in mind that they were doing the writing and whatnot. And I think they said something about the fact that they were going to try to film it at their estate or their mansion or something like that, but they didn't end up doing that either. So, but that was kind of an interesting little note too. There's obviously a lot of trivia on a film that has been around since 1940 and has definitely been, reviewed in lots of different ways over the generations. Mostly positive, but I can kind of see some of it. But like you said, I think my takeaway at the end, as I kind of struggle to decide how this fits into the other films that we've watched of Cary Grant's, is kind of what you said. Like, what's the point ultimately, and where is the build, the momentum, the, you know, crescendo, and some of that stuff that you kind of hope for in a romantic comedy, like especially even when we're thinking about some of those ones that we listed off. I think of like When Harry Met Sally or any romantic comedy that we've seen, like some of them are like a dime a dozen or whatever, but there seems to be more of an arc in those. And to me, that was what the main thing that was missing here was, if she's going to end up with Cary Grant, I need more of an arc between those two characters and a more of a rationale for how they end up together. And I feel like without that, it seems like we're just along for a weird ride that doesn't necessarily, like, it reminds you of like a story that somebody would tell you about an experience they had, And yeah. I don't think I would hear that story and say like, hey, this would make a great movie. Because it's like missing the bang, like it's missing the gusto. But what are your final thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think, and even like she has a lot of decisions to make in this, and like even when she decides to break things off with her fiance, like that moment just was, I mean, a bit too clean, and almost like it felt like there needed to be a bit more there. And like I said, I think that's the biggest issue is that. I think these are characters that, in a lot of ways, do some really like awful things, and are so, especially even like Jimmy Stewart's character, who's supposed to be the everyman, like the way, like he's kind of like so dismissive of Ruth Housey's character, and mm-hmm. and but like there's no resolution there, and I get maybe that's kind of the point. It's trying to show that life isn't that clean, but then at the end of the movie, it kind of reverts against that, and everything kind of comes together far too quickly. So I do think there was probably, I don't know how much this is in line with the play, and I wonder if the play was able to maybe give us a bit more, but I don't know. Like, and like I said, like you mentioned, maybe it's just coming off of the other films, it's, you know, changing direction as quickly as possible. But like I said, I do think ultimately, like I walked away with even trying to, you know, not allow you know, the process of time to make me like overly judge it, but even without that, I was disappointed and just ultimately did not really enjoy this. So
I also find it weird, like it's like the director wanted to do a swerve at the end, but I don't feel like you can do swerves when it comes to relationships. Like, you have to build it to a point where it's believable. Like, you can't just throw like a curveball at the end and be like, oh, you thought he was going to be with that guy, but she's with this guy. And like, that doesn't work when it takes time for us to believe in the relationship. Like, I don't know. Like, that's ultimately what leaves me kind of wondering, like, cause it sets it all up that she's not getting married to her fiance because of Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they set that up. Whether it's just Jimmy Stewart is the window to her, to let her know that she's not really into that guy. I guess you can go that route. But like I said, I feel like it was too quick and too clean at the end for me. And then, like you said, there's a lot of ultimately bad decisions that don't have consequences.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Like even like Cary Grant, like everything he does is basically like a lie, and kind of just does gaslighting and kind of manipulates everyone. And at the end, it's like, oh, I never saw a reason why them getting together at the end is a positive for either of them. This feels like the next day it's going to be a replay of where the movie began. So,
yeah, absolutely. Hey,
I would be interested because I heard like there was an interview with like Julia Roberts. There's a lot of people who love this movie, which is fine.
Yeah.
She says that it should never be remade because it's perfect. But I don't know. Like I could see, like I said, I think there are the bones of something really interesting here, and maybe without the oversay of the the code that you can maybe get around some of those issues. So I don't know. Would you be open for them to kind of take this and remake it? I know they obviously did the musical way back after this and stuff,
right? But I mean, I think you can, like you said, like we talked about, you take all the domestic abuse out, we don't need that. You make it some other reason why they're not together, and then you do something. There has to be something between when they're having their drunk sequence and she's realizing maybe that she's not meant for the other guy. There has to be a whole nother act then to me that like makes her go from Jimmy Stewart to Cary Grant, or there has to be something like, so I mean, I think there's the bones there for possibly something. And obviously, you know, you can throw different types of comedy in there to make it, you know, work. It's just, I don't know. Like I said, it's hard coming off of such fast paced comedy to also have this like as a slower burn comedy type thing. But I have learned one thing as we've covered Cary Grant is that it seems like and maybe this works because the characters in these movies do the same thing, but as an audience, we've seen him play some roles that aren't like the greatest human beings in the world. Yet it's really hard not to like him.
He really is. Yeah,
he's really like smooth, and he's really likable as a performer. And so even when he's playing these, like we talked about with Suspicion, like he's lying the entire film. Like there's nothing good about him for most of that film. And it's like, hey, I still gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he can turn this around. It's like, well, Cary Grant has that going for him, I guess. And we'll have to see if that continues in our next film when we talk about 1941's Penny Serenade, which unlike this film, he was actually nominated for an Academy Award for that one. So like we do every time, let's give them a brief glimpse of what to expect. Dan, what is your history or knowledge of the 1941 film Penny Serenade?
Like this, I honestly know even less about Penny Serenade than I do the Philadelphia Story. I've never watched it. I don't know if I heard much about it before we started doing this retrospective. So I'm looking forward to it because I know literally nothing. I don't even know if it's a comedy or if it's more, you know, where it falls into that line. I'm assuming it's a little bit of both because that's what Cary Grant did back in the day. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it because I'm wondering, like, what about that role gave him the Oscar? And is he doing something extra special to deserve it? Or is it more of those like right place, right time? So curious to see.
So it's directed by George Stevens, starring Cary Grant and Irene Dunne, who we've heard that name a couple different times as we were talking about some of the Hitchcock stuff. And it's listed as a melodrama, Dan. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But it's also got Cary Grant making a very much of a kind of funny look on the poster. So it's hard to see him not adding some type of comedy in here. So like you, I know nothing about Penny Serenade other than the picture of the poster that I'm looking at and a couple names that are attached to it. So I'm definitely interested to see what his Academy Award role looks like compared to the other, what now, seven films that we've seen him in. So that'll be very interesting as we make our way through this. So Dan, how are our ways that people can reach out to you if they have any questions or comments about your take on the Philadelphia Story?
So if you love it and you hate me now, you can reach me at Comic Concierge on all the social media platforms. Also, I guess I should throw out our letterbox because I never talk about that. True. But I'm at the only social media site that I'm not Comic Concierge, it's Letterboxd, where I'm Movie Revolt, so you can find me there too.
All right, yeah, you can check my Letterboxd out as well. Just search out Kevin 1981, I think is my screen name, or Kevin Thompson, either one. The other thing I forgot to throw out in the introduction is that I'm going through a weird phase of movie watching. So we're watching all these Hitchcock and Cary Grant films and different things like that. And I decided to pair that up with going through all six Final Destination films. So it's really weird dichotomy going from one to the other and back and forth. I will say that much. So it's an interesting journey for sure. You can also reach out to me at the social medias at Optimus Solo. You can search out the show name, Cinema Geekcast, or the network, the Geekcast Radio Network. So that does it for this episode. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to more of the Cinema Geeks.